You're listening to Clinical Conversations from the NEJM Group. I'm Joe Elia. Our guest this time is Dr. Zane Kassam, the Chief Medical Officer at Open Biome, which claims priority as the world's first stool bank for fecal transplants. A few months ago, I overheard a conversation during which Dr. Kassam was explaining what Open Biome is about, and I thought the listeners of Clinical Conversations would be interested too. Dr. Kassam is a gastroenterologist and epidemiologist. In addition to his work at Open Biome, he's a clinical member of MIT's Center for Microbiome Informatics and Therapeutics. Welcome, Dr. Kassam.
Thanks so much, Joe. Really a pleasure being here today.
Yeah, I was doing background reading on this, and I thought, gee, I'll be clever and I'll figure out how many genes are in the gut and how many are in the human body. And somebody had already solved that equation for me. I read the number of genes in the typical human body is overwhelmingly dominated by bacterial genes on the order of 100 to 1.
That's right. I know it. We're more microbes than man or woman in this case, it almost seems like. And although that number is certainly one that's most popular, it's been updated numbers, that's certainly still a domination, but slightly more closer to about 20 million. But I think the point is still correct that we're overwhelmingly more microbes than we think.
And they're not all in the gut. I mean, they're on skin, they're in the nose. Do they sort of act together?
The way that I like to think about it is from an epidemiological lens. We know there's these large cohort studies out of Scandinavia where they look at children who receive antibiotics. What we're really starting to uncover is that the microbes play a central role in training the immune system, particularly when you're young. And having a perturbation of the gut microbiome, certainly when you're young, may have a long-term consequence down the road, given the interplay of the microbiome and the immune system. That's something we're just kind of uncovering.
In terms of what Open Biome does and the treatment that it's using for C. diff, has there ever been a more difficult treatment to sell than human feces?
Well, I'll answer that with a story, actually.
Okay.
And so, you know, how did I get into the field of fecal transplants? And so I had a patient, she was 82 years old. I still remember vividly, Mrs. Smith. She was British and she loosely resembled the Queen of England and never let me forget about it. She loved her grandkids, but, she also loved gardening more than anything else. And I saw her at foot of bed in tears. She'd had four rounds of vancomycin for a recurrent Clostridium difficile infection. And she was tied to the toilet. She was having 20 bowel movements a day. And she just wanted her colon removed. And, you know, at the time, it was 10, 12 years ago, I said, half jokingly at the time as a trainee, we should try a fecal transplant, expecting her to laugh. And she laughed. And then we did it. And 48 hours later, Joe, she was gardening. And it blew my mind. I said, you know, I've been around medicine a little bit, but there's nothing in medicine I've seen has done this much of an impact on someone this quickly. It was the closest thing to a miracle I had seen in clinical care. And that, I think, speaks to the point about the power of the microbiome and the potential of the microbiome. And there have been data. There's data on looking at the perceptions of this therapy. And there's a great paper that was published in CID, as well as one in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, that looked at both the physician's perceptions and the patient's perceptions. And the patients were more than willing to move this forward. And it was the physicians that were stuck on some of the concepts behind it. That said, that's evolved a lot dynamically over the last 5 years. To give you some context, Open Biome is a nonprofit stool bank. Think of it like a blood bank, but for stool. and where we find and screen the healthy donors.
Are they capsules or are they infusions given by enema? What's the product?
They screen donors very rigorously and provide frozen, ready-to-use fecal transplant material for clinicians. There are many ways you can get that material. The first is for lower GI delivery, so enema or colonoscopy. And that's the most common. There's also upper delivery, upper GI delivery, so via nasoenteric gastric duodenal nasojejunal tube or upper endoscopy. And the last, as you alluded to, is capsules. So they're frozen capsules.
And what's the cost of a typical treatment?
It's really charged at cost, which is $485 for a treatment.
You know, given the price of new drugs recently, When you said 485, I was expecting three zeros.
I mean, for us, the mission is to make sure there's safe access for patients, and right. I think keeping the price point as low as possible.
What other therapies are under consideration with the FDA under investigational new drug applications?
Yeah, so there's a whole host. So I'm helping co-lead about 20 clinical trials in a whole host of invites. Maybe I'll give you two that I think are particularly exciting that were recently published. So one is in ulcerative colitis, a type of inflammatory bowel disease. And one of my mentors and a luminary in the field, Paul Moyetti at McMaster University, was a lead author on a randomized controlled trial, the first of its kind, for fecal transplants in ulcerative colitis. So just to take you a step back and tell you the design, it was a 75-patient randomized controlled trial, double-blind placebo-controlled, where one group got fecal transplants by enema once a week for 6 weeks, and the corollary really got a placebo. And then we assessed for a remission of ulcerative colitis both endoscopically and clinically at 7 weeks. And lo and behold, that treatment group had a remission rate of about 24% compared to 5% in the placebo, statistically significant. That was really very exciting. To give you context, the current treatments on the market right now, biologics like infliximab, have about a 25 to 30% remission rate. So on the order of magnitude around the same, truthfully. But that wasn't necessarily the most exciting part. It was exciting, but perhaps the most exciting part was that one donor, donor B, seemed to work 40% of the time. It seemed to induce remission 40% of the time. The other donors, the same as placebo. The trial was driven by this single donor, which I think is very much a paradigm shift. We have thought for C. diff, everyone's stool, as long as it's safe, works very well. Your stool, Joe, my stool, the guy down the road's stool, as long as it's safe, seems to work very well, about 87% of the time. But what we saw in ulcerative colitis is that it's not like C. diff. It's not going to be the panacea. It's not going to work at a 90% kind of clinical remission rate. But it's not going to also be one donor set of stool. It's not going to be everyone's stool that works very well, potentially. And that helps to drive that are probably likely very key microbes that are driving the effect. And there are many groups that are working towards how to find out the key microbes, pull those ones out, turn that into a capsule to treat patients with very challenging diseases.
You mentioned two trials. What's the second?
So the second trial I'll mention is a study in hepatic encephalopathy. So Jesmo and Bajaj at VCU collaborated with our group as well on looking at whether microbiome therapeutics and fecal transplants have an impact in hepatic encephalopathy. And as context, we think that the microbiome has a huge impact on hepatic encephalopathy. We, in fact, one of the treatments is an antibiotic called rifaximin. But this study was different for the following reason. It's starting to move towards precision microbial medicine. So we started with looking at a cross-sectional data comparing patients that had hepatic encephalopathy and healthy controls. And we looked at their microbiome. We noticed there were huge deficiencies in certain bacteria in the hepatic encephalopathy group. And so we said, okay, that's very helpful. Let's go and find a donor using a machine learning algorithm that complements the deficiencies of the missing microbes that we saw in the hepatic encephalopathy patient. Don't take any donor. Take one that we think is actually thoughtfully and rationally selected, building on the work that Paul Moyetti's group did, saying, hey, look, one donor works really well. So instead of picking blindly, we rationally selected the right donor. And then we did a randomized clinical trial. It was a pilot study, looked at safety, but it was 20 patients. 10 got an antibiotic to clear out the bacteria, and then a fecal transplant from this one donor. And the rest got standard of care, lactulose and rifaximin, just like the first group. And we watched. And we watched for 150 days. And the group in the standard of care arm had 6 hospitalizations related to hepatic encephalopathy, totally expected. It's a very risky, high-risk group. They're expected to do that. The group in the treatment arm had zero hepatic encephalopathy admissions. Very safe therapy and very interesting to see the clinical manifestation. On top of that, hepatic encephalopathy have cognitive changes. It affects cognition. And so we looked at two tests, cognitive tests, one called a psychometric hepatic encephalopathy score and one called a Stroop test. Technical things, but essentially they are tools to assess cognition. And lo and behold, the group that got standard treatment, no change, the group that got the fecal transplant arm from the selected rational donor had an improvement from their baseline. Still very early, but very exciting to see where this field is going.
Let me ask, how do you think that this will affect that this work will affect primary care, for instance? Do you think that that clinicians will be using these therapies?
Yeah, no. So I think there'll be kind of three approaches. I think there'll be a suite of options. So I think there'll be first broad spectrum microbial therapeutics similar to fecal transplant that I think will be very important for many conditions, and I'll get into from a primary care perspective. There'll be also refined synthetic ecologies that are almost like designer probiotics to deal with very specific clinical conditions. And also there's another approach called autologous fecal transplant, and I'll get into that and why I think it might be helpful in primary care. So autologous fecal transplant is collecting your own stool when you're healthy. And then over time, a condition may happen, you may receive your own stool back. And so a study that we're doing with the CDC is looking at autologous fecal transplant in a long-term care facility population. And so we're taking 180 patients, working with Boston Medical Center, and collecting their stool, nursing home patients when they're healthy, and then we're going to wait. 40% of nursing home patients will get an infection requiring an antibiotic over the course of a year. From there, we're going to randomize them to getting either their own stool back or a placebo, and follow to see if we're able to decolonize antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Also to see if they'll prevent getting antibiotic-resistant infections, true infections. And I think you can imagine a universe, not now, not today, maybe not tomorrow, but in 10, 15, 20 years, where I mentioned the child that has a higher risk for a autoimmune condition or a metabolic condition because they got an antibiotic when they're young. Can you imagine a universe in which you're going to get that ear infection, that's fine, but you're going to collect their stool before, they're going to get their antibiotic, and they're going to get their own stool after, and we'll be able to prevent many of these chronic conditions. And so for the primary care physician, I think there's going to be a suite of options down the road.
Is there a book, a series of articles for people who want to familiarize themselves with this field?
There's a number of books out there. Marty Blaser has a number of excellent books, and there's also a book called Let Them Eat Dirt, which is by Brett Finley at the University of British Columbia, who I think has done a really good job of capturing the field from a public perception perspective and how it's evolving.
What would you want clinicians to take away from this conversation? If there was just one concept that you wanted them to walk away with, what would it be?
I think it's really important to know that we're on the tip of something very exciting, and that the suite of new medicines that are coming down the road are going to be transformative. And I think that's a very exciting piece to know about. I also think it's important to know that although antibiotics have an extremely important role, we have to recognize that there are consequences from a stewardship perspective, not just antibiotic resistance, but also the fact that the microbiome is ameliorated with antibiotics. The way that I think about it is learning from surgeons. Surgeons, you know, make an incision and they close up that wound. And now physicians, internal medicine physicians, primary care physicians, anyone that's using antibiotics, we make an incision into the microbiome when we give an antibiotic. And we have to learn from the surgeons to sew that incision back up. And I think that's what's coming down the road. There'll be other microbial therapeutics to start to close that incision. I think that's a very important piece.
After I thanked Dr. Kasem for his time, he said he wanted to talk a bit more about the safety issue.
Safety really is, you know, this field's top priority. Both myself and everyone in this field really want to make sure we're doing our due diligence in this field. And that's why it's so important that we bring safety at its forefront. The short-term safety profile for fecal transplants is quite good. We've seen that in many, many studies. But the one aspect that we're really trying to learn more about is the long-term safety approach. If you can cure it, maybe you can cause it. And so we have to be quite thoughtful about assessing long-term safety profile. And so the American Gastroenterological Association, American Gut and Open Biomer, are very fortunate to have moving forward with a project called the AGA FMT Registry. And this is a 4,000 patient cohort in which we're following patients for up to 10 years to really try to tease apart what are the long-term consequences of microbial therapeutics. And I think it's a really exciting piece to that's going to help the field. And we give antibiotics and we don't necessarily look at the long-term consequences. We're just starting to unravel that. And I think while we're very much in the infancy of this field, it's very important that we look towards the long-term signs and symptoms. And I think the AJ Registry will do that wonderfully.
That was our 207th edition. All earlier conversations may be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. Kristen Kelly is the executive producer here for the NEJM Group. I'm Joe Elia. Thank you for listening.